6 o'clock Eastern time. Govern yourselves accordingly, depending on where you are. Maybe a different time where you are. It's prime time on the Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet. Bob McCown, Stephen Brent in our Toronto studios for this Monday, December the 17th. A lot of baseball talk for you this hour as the Blue Jays, is this the final piece to the puzzle? Yet to be seen, but it's a significant piece, to be sure. The R.A. Dickey deal is done. The Blue Jays are announcing the deal even as we speak. And Alex Anthopoulos, the Blue Jays general manager, will join us in but moments from now for his first interview since this deal was consummated. In general, Brunt, they get the Cy Young Award winner. They get a catcher who caught Dickey 27 times last year. They got another catcher who caught him 7 times last year. And they give up a very expensive catcher in Buck and 2 young prospects. Well, 3, I guess, young prospects, but 2 high-level prospects in Darno and Syndergaard. Your general thoughts on this transaction?
Well, they gave up a lot, and but this is the grand plan. And it's the grand plan, as it's been explained for a long time, that you acquire draft picks to acquire prospects, and at some point, you know, some of them make it to your major league team, and some of them you wheel and deal. And, you know, Alex Anthopoulos accumulated a ton of assets, and he rebuilt the Jays minor league system, stocked it with assets. You know, a lot of blue chip guys. It's not like they don't have, you know, some players down there. They still do. But this is the moment. You know, there's, for a whole bunch of reasons, the Marlins deal coming together the way it did, the Yankees in not spending money and having some issues, the Red Sox in a rebuild mode, going out and picking scraps off the free agent market, Tampa maybe taking a half a step back to move forward, Baltimore doing nothing this offseason after the great year they had last year. So there's an opportunity in the AL East. There's maybe a window, and they're going for it. You know, and it's, I know there are people who have been, we're in a world now where people follow prospects in a way that they didn't. They pay attention to what's going on in the minors. They read all kinds of stuff about these guys, and they're sitting there waiting, you know, when's Travis d'Arnaud going to play for the Blue Jays? But this is the way baseball works. And if they are in contention in September, as everybody, including the odds makers, now believe, I don't think anybody will be lamenting this deal.
Did I mention Wilmar Becerra as the extra guy in the deal?
Jay's guy going back, and I know nothing about him at all.
Outfielder, and I do not either. We will check into it, and we'll ask Alex when he joins us in just a couple of seconds from now. What's also a little bit confusing, I just got the media release, which literally just went out this second. We were told that the deal for Dickey was $25 million, and half of this, the paper, is cut off here, so I can't read all of it, but it would appear it says that this deal is essentially a 3-year deal for $29 million. So it's the $5 million that he had already on his deal, an additional $24 million onto that, and then a club option for the 2016 season at $12 million. That's what it appears to be.
Yep. Well, and again, if you look at what the market is, and I know R.A. Dickey is 38 and he is a late bloomer, but he's coming off, you know, not just one great season, but he's had 3 very good years in a row since he figured out the knuckleball. If you look at what the market price is this year for free agent starting pitchers, those numbers are a relative bargain.
This is the same thing. You just give me the same thing 3 times.
But now
it's still cut off on one side. You can keep giving it to me, but it's all the same. We'll figure it out in good time. So there are those who will say d'Arnaud and Syndergaard are 2 pieces, 2 big pieces, and too much for the Blue Jays to give up. You don't think that. I don't think that. I have yet to talk to anybody today who has significant baseball knowledge, not that we do, but that we respect, that thinks it's too much.
Well, you know what? If Travis d'Arnaud turns into Johnny Bench, you know, then we will lament this, I suppose.
Wait a sec. Let me give you one. Travis d'Arnaud turns into Johnny Bench, but the Blue Jays win 2 World Series.
I think everybody would take that. You know, I think they would. Most Jays fans would take that. And you can't have it. You know, it's funny, the discussion in the last 48 hours, 72 hours, as the things come together. But, you know, you can't have it both ways. You know, there have been, as we entered this offseason, people were lamenting, saying, I don't want prospects. I want results. I want big league players. I don't want to talk about guys in A-ball. Give us results. Spend money. We want to win now. It's been 20 years. We want to win. So when they do something like this, you can't then turn around and say, but, boy, we should have kept those guys in A-ball or, you know, or d'Arnaud on the verge of the major leagues. You do have to give something up. And, you know, they've given up, because people pay attention to those guys in the minors and those names, they've given up a lot of familiar names, you know, between this deal and the Miami deal. But that's, again, that's how it works. And some of those guys will pan out, and some of them will not pan out. And, you know, it's Alex Anthopoulos' job, among his many jobs, is to know, you know, is to kind of do the risk-reward thing and say, you know, we know more about this guy than anybody knows about him. We know what his ceiling's going to be. We know what else we have at that position in our system. So we can afford to do this, or we cannot afford to do this.
Right.
That's a calculation he has to make.
Just some note, a note on Mike Nikias. Do you know much about him?
I caught a few games for him this year, but that's all I know.
Native of Vancouver, British Columbia.
Ooh.
Canadian boy. Split the season between Buffalo and the Mets. 174 in 47 games. One home run, 13 RBIs. So, don't know how he fits into the equation here. Probably back at Buffalo.
I was going to say, at least he knows Buffalo, because that's they're switching farm teams.
Yeah, I would suspect that's exactly where he's going to wind up. But then again, with Alex Anthopoulos, you know, again stockpiling catchers. Catchers coming out the wazoo.
Well, and we have been, you know, I think we thought he was done before, Bob. I think most of us kind of thought after that Miami deal, well, that's probably it. Do we think he's done now?
I don't think he's done trying. Whether he's going to be able to come up with something, I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, actually.
If you were going to look at where the Blue Jays might still want to shore things up, give me one and two.
First base.
And then?
I
still think you have to look at the back end of the bullpen.
I don't know. I would Jansen. Somebody's got to know.
Jansen's coming off. I understand it's minor surgery, but okay. So Alex is going to join us at 6:20. Now he's running a little late.
Okay,
for whatever reason,
he's got nothing to do. What the heck? Should be talking to us right now.
Should have been waiting for us to call. We'll see if we can get Jeff Blair on the line. Blair, I'm intrigued by his perspective on this.
But, you know, about baseball. Again, you know, the calculation's also got to be on Sergio Santos. You know, we talked to Alex
about
that.
Where are you on him?
Well,
you have no way of knowing.
Well, you have some way of knowing, because they're, you know, monitoring his rehab, so they know where he's coming along, and they made the deal for him last year. They know what he is. But you can always have more arms in the bullpen, and I'm sure that's a place where they may still, Alex has talked about that bullpen depth. But I would love to have a right-handed hitting alternative to Adam Lind, at least a platoon alternative to Adam Lind at first base, because I don't want him going up against...
Assuming Encarnacion is your DH.
Yeah, assuming Encarnacion is your DH.
Well, right. Which I think is assuming a lot, probably.
Well, then, okay, so flip it. So you need a DH.
All right, fair enough. Jeff Blair is the star of the Jeff Blair Show on all Jeff Blair radio. And joins us now. Well, do you see any downside in this?
No, I don't. You guys pretty much covered it. Two real good prospects. Brett Cecil and Travis Snyder were good prospects at one time. And more to the point, I think Jerry Howarth mentioned this on my show this morning. Jeff Kent was traded for David Cone, if I'm not mistaken.
And
Jeff Kent's probably going to the Hall of Fame. I think most Jays fans would, I think they're pretty happy with the World Series that Cone helped bring. So I'm with you guys. If Travis d'Arnaud turns into Johnny Bench and the Jays win a couple of World Series, I think that's a trade-off most Jays fans would take.
Yeah.
Another thing to remember, and people haven't talked about this a lot, but last year the Jays started working out Travis d'Arnaud at first base. Now, he has had a history of injuries. He is such a good offensive player that I think at some point somebody's going to look at moving him out from behind home plate and maybe moving him to first base. So I think there's a lot at play in here. And if you're the Blue Jays, I mean, I'll tell you what I was scared of. When I heard they were going to get rid of Anthony Gost, or he was going to be part of the deal, that scared me. Because I think of all the players in the minor leagues, Anthony Gost is A, closest to being ready to play for this team, and B, has the skill set that this team really needs. So I don't see any downside for the Toronto Blue Jays at all.
Yeah, it's a totally different value equation for Travis d'Arnaud if he's a first baseman of the future.
Well, and the other thing, you know, think about this. They've got Kyle Drabek, Drew Hutchison, and Luis Perez all coming off Tommy John surgery.
Right.
The law of averages would dictate that one of those three guys is going to be ready to go in 2014, possibly contributing in the major league staff.
Yeah, now they may lose Josh Johnson at that same stage, though, right?
So And they still have Aaron Sanchez, by most people's mind, the number two starter of that Lansing Big Three. So it's not like the cover's bare as far as pitching goes.
No, but you've got to, you know, when the decision was made to do the deal, and I said this earlier, when the decision was made to do the deal with Florida, everything changed. And everything changed in terms of how you view your prospects and how you plan to utilize your prospects. I think if you don't do the Florida deal, none of these other dominoes fall. And you aren't doing this Dickey deal as a standalone deal, Blair.
No, absolutely not.
If you have the same lineup, ostensibly, as you had at the end of last season, you're not in this deal with Dickey. You're not giving them Darno. You're not giving them Syndergaard. You're giving them nothing. You're saying, it doesn't help me.
Well, not only that, but you look at the Red Sox, you look at the Yankees, you look at the Rays, and Steven, you made this point very well. But what people also need to remember is the issues that are facing the Yankees in particular, those aren't one-year issues. They've got Mark Teixeira's contract, which is a millstone.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to give Robinson Cano a contract that's going to make him the highest-paid player in the game at some point this year or risk losing him to free agency. They've got a lot of issues. If they want to stay below $189 million, they have a lot of issues. And the Red Sox, you know, the Red Sox aren't a preferred destination anymore. Even David Ortiz said, all the stuff that's gone on here in the past 2 years, it's not a preferred destination anymore. There's a lot of stuff that comes with being a member of the Red Sox that's easy to handle when you're winning World Series. Not so easy to handle when you're finishing third or fourth.
Jeff, do you have any qualms at all about R.A. Dickey?
No. I did originally, but, you know, the more you look at his numbers and the more you read people who have much more of an understanding of pitching than I do or talk to people who have much more of an understanding of pitching than I do, if you look at his numbers and separate, if you separate last year's numbers out of the equation, he's still at worst, the number four starter in the Blue Jays staff. So I have no qualms about it at all.
If I read these numbers correctly, and I'm not convinced that I do, but it would appear as if they acquired Dickey for an additional, he has $5 million on his deal from this year, or did, and they now get him for 3 years at $29 million, or $24 million for the next two, which is $2 million less than he was asking for from the Mets. And even some very smart people said the Blue Jays are probably going to have to go to 28 or 30 in order to get Dickey. And what it may speak to, and I'm interested to talk to Robert Allen when he chooses to talk, is how much of this signing is because he took a look at what the Blue Jays have done, took a look at this lineup and said, hey, they got a chance to win a championship. I want to be part of that. And does this take us all the way back to 1991, 92?
I mean, I hope that's the case. Either that or I'd fire his agent if I was
Yeah.
One of the two. I think you're right, Bob. But, you know, this is a different guy. If you talk to people around the Mets or people around baseball, this is he's a piece of work. He can be a bit of a clubhouse lawyer. Not entirely a bad thing when you're winning 23 games. But he has an understanding of his value. And I don't think he's the type of guy that would take an extra $2.5 to $3 million a year to be unhappy. And I think that's part of the equation here. And I've got to think, too, that at some point he's looked at the Rogers Center and said, you know what? For a knuckleball pitcher, there's worse places to spend April and May than inside.
Yeah, no, that's it. Now, Bob and I were just kicking this around, Jeff. Do you think they're done now?
No.
So what's next?
Well, I'm still not entirely convinced that Colby Rasmus is going to be the opening day center fielder.
Oh, God, I hope you're right.
I still think with Anthony Gose and with their lineup the way it is, you could very easily have Anthony Gose hitting ninth or eighth, and you're getting better defense out of him than you will out of Colby Rasmus. I think Alex has got one more move to make. I think he wants to really go for the jugular and add a big-time bullpen arm. I don't know if he can do it.
Yeah.
But I think that's his next play, and then maybe add another veteran bat to the mix. But, you know, you can do that through free agency, but I don't think he's done.
We're going to talk to the general manager next and ask him all these questions, and, of course, he'll give us honest answers as to what's coming next. Thank you, Mr. Blair, as always. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, it's a fun time to watch baseball and talk about baseball.
Middle of December. Giddy up.
Absolutely.
Jeff Blair of our flagship station, The Fan and The Globe and Mail. The general manager is back again. Alex Anthopoulos next when Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet.
Odds are most people won't be a rock star, fly in a private jet, or date a supermodel. You are not most people. You play at Bodog.net. You know the odds. You know how the pros think. You know how to win. Because until the night is over, the final buzzer sounds, and the last card is played, anything can happen. That's why you play the game. Bodog.net.
Minutes past the hour. It's Canada's most listened to sports talk presentation. It's Primetime on the Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet in high definition. Bob McConnell with Stephen Brunt. Here's the busiest man in baseball. Here's Blue Jays general manager Alex Anthopoulos. Tikanis.
Kalasi.
I'm Tikanis too, but I'm not as Tikanis as you are.
Your Greek is getting better and better. It's unbelievable.
Nah, it ain't. Nah, it ain't. Stop it. All of this is a series of dominoes, and we get that. But I'm going to take an unusual tact, I think, here. Let's go back to pre-conversations with Florida that resulted, and we know how that worked, how it started and how it grew. Did you go into this whole thing with anything that resembles what you've managed to put together?
No, because I had no idea we'd have this kind of money to spend. And that's not to say that, like we've talked about before, that there weren't scenarios that it could happen. But, I went in with, my great line from last year about parameters. But I went in with an area and everything, all of our planning was based on that area. And if you have to call an audible because something presents itself, if something does present itself, you make that decision then. And did with the Florida trade. But a lot of our off-season planning was certain free agents we were going to go after hard. And certainly there was going to be some trade targets that we thought could be available just from July conversations that we were going to try to pursue as well.
Sure.
But, to some of these other things that have developed, it's moved so fast. So you just react.
So it becomes dominoes, doesn't it, Alex? I mean, and we try and compare this to what happened in this city in the late 90s when – just one after another, guys started coming here and things started falling into place. And I'm wondering, when you sat down with Robert Allen Dickey and said, there's a possibility and we want to sign you to a deal here. I mean, all of a sudden you said, look at what we've got. Maybe there's a championship in this. Did that come up in the conversation?
I think, I'm not one to, I'm more of a, hopefully, under promise, over deliver, and
sure.
I think it's more of, I think baseball, just like anything in life, sports. We've seen it with a lot of other teams. You feel good about the talent and so on, and there's no guarantees, and you have to play the games and all those other cliches that you say. But I think with RA, the talk was how good our team can be, how much you can complete it, by being the number one starter, slotting everybody down, the innings that he would bring to the rotation, the impact on the bullpen, the fact that pretty much, the bulk of the team is under control for the next few years. We were only doing the deal if we can get an extension with him, but knowing that he would time with the other players and be under control for that same length of time, that this isn't one, everyone talks about, 13, we're all in. No, it's we're all in for a run here with Batista and Reyes and Burley and NRA. And hopefully a guy like Josh Johnson could be part of that too going forward, Moro, Romero, and so on. But we have a pretty good group, and I think RA viewed the fact that the changes that we did make, I think he has confidence in himself, and you add what he's done, and he's not a one-year guy. He's done it for 3 years now. He just happened to win the Cy Young and have his win total come up last year, but his ERAs have been below 3-2 in the last 3 years. He would have pitched over 200 innings all three, but 2010 he was in the minors to start the year, so he's been good for quite a bit of time, and I think it reminds me of Jose Bautista in a lot of ways, where just a lot of people just didn't want to buy in. And, finally it came a point in time that they finally said, okay, you know what, he's really good. And you would think the Cy Young would validate that, but the fact that he does throw what he does throw in his age, there'll be doubters. But we're very convinced he's going to be a frontline starter for us.
Alex, give us the play-by-play on this one. How did it start and how did it progress?
I approached Sandy Alderson at the GM meetings. We were at the Werner's house, which is the Washington Nationals owners. They had called they invited everyone from the GM meetings over to their home, beautiful, basically palace. And on the way back, there was a shuttle bus, a few of them, and probably a 12-seater or something like that. So Sandy and I happened to be on it, and I'd been meaning to grab him at some point at the meetings and ask him about RA, and I just hadn't had a chance to connect with him. So I saw him jumping on the bus. I kind of scooted over and grabbed him, and I said, "Hey, Sandy, would you talk about him?" And we got on the bus together. He said, "Hey, why don't you sit beside me, and we'll talk a little more." So 20-minute ride back, we talked about it, and his goal at the time was to sign him. He didn't want to engage in trade talk at all. He said, "Look, I'm probably going to need till American Thanksgiving before this gets resolved." And I kept following up, and it seemed like he kept being delayed, and they were getting close or moving. So he wouldn't really engage in trade talks. And then finally, I'd say just before the winter meetings is when we finally engaged, about 3 or 4 days. And I made one big push to try to get something done before the meetings. It didn't get done. We talked again at the meetings a couple times, but not real seriously. And then when we got back from the meetings, we engaged again and pretty seriously. And the deal was completed Thursday. We had agreed, and it leaked, I think, the next day. But, a lot of times when things leak, they're already done. We're just waiting to exchange all the files and have the doctors examine the players and so on. It just took a lot of time.
Was Darno always, was he the key for them from the beginning?
He was. He was the key for them from the beginning. Obviously, we tried to do it without including him in the deal. I tried to do a lot of different versions of the deal and so on, but they were pretty adamant that he was the guy they needed to have. And we finally put him on the table, and he was on the table for about 10 days, and that wasn't moving the needle at all. And then ultimately, I just felt like it got to the point that we needed to move on from this thing because it wasn't going anywhere. There wasn't a lot of dialogue. We were pretty much stuck in our position. And finally, as Sandy said, "Look, I just need to know what will get this thing done." And he said, ultimately, if Syndergaard is in this deal with Darno, that would really compel us to make a move to do something. So we talked about it internally, and obviously it was a steep price to pay, no doubt about it. But when you look at where our team is right now and the timing of the club, and our best players are in their late 20s, early 30s, they're under contract for the next 3 or 4 years. As great as the prospects we give up could end up being, it may not time with everyone else. By the time they are all stars, hopefully, and Cy Young winners themselves, Batista could be gone, Encarnacion could be gone, Reyes could be gone, Burley can be gone, and we may be in the same position we've been in the last 20 years with this organization, a bunch of good players. But with no assurances that we have enough around them to contend. And that's the hardest part about this job is how often does it time where you have a bullpen, a rotation, an offense, a bench, it all comes together and you can all have them contractually under control for an extended period of time that you can make a run. You're not just built on 1 year. So and that was the most compelling part. This was a piece that we felt could really put this team over the top.
We talked about this earlier. Are you done?
I would say minor tweaks if we do anything. Love to add another piece to the bullpen if we could. Still need to look at some options for a 25th man. I think financially we are. And even in this deal, we were at our upper limits in terms of payroll, and John Buck was important in this deal to offset the salary that RA has. And John Buck makes $6 million. RA, as part of the contract, makes $5 million and 13. And then Josh Tolley's arbitration eligible, and the salaries will pretty much wash. We might be taking on a little bit of money, but I just don't know that there's a whole lot of flexibility unless it's a really impressive impact player. But we don't have any dialogue, and I don't see that occurring the next 2 months.
With Alex Anthopoulos, if I read the release correctly, the Dickey contract is including 2013. Is 3 years, $29 million. Is that accurate?
Correct. That's $29 million in salary, and then we have a club option
for $12 million for the following year.
What would be the fourth year if we were to exercise the option?
So, if you then take the $5 million that he was going to make in 2013 anyway, it means you get the last 2 years at $24 million, which, again, if I read it correctly, is even less than what he was asking from the Mets for, significantly less than what people on the outside thought you were going to have to pay him in order to get him to agree. So clearly, he must have felt very comfortable with coming to this organization.
I think he did. I mean, I flew down to Nashville, and the manager Gibby flew down as well.
Oh, did he?
I spent time with him, yeah. And even our pro scouting director, Perry Manassian, knew R.A. well from his time with the Rangers. So just from a familiarity and comfort level, because they had spent years together, he came down as well. So we spent actually quite a bit of time in Nashville, and we spent a lot of time with him and just talking about all kinds of things. And I think ultimately, I don't think we needed to sell the team. I think the talent on paper obviously looks good. That certainly doesn't guarantee anything, as we all know. But I think he felt comfortable, and I think he understood that adding a piece like himself and is confident in what he can do, you know, certainly impacts the club that much more. Offensively, we've always felt pretty good about the club, and it really came down to the rotation, which will also impact the bullpen. You know, how many times last year did we get 4 innings or 5 innings out of our starters, and we had to suck up a ton of innings out of the bullpen? He averaged 7 innings a start last year, and you know, he's done that in past years. He's really been a 200-inning guy. So I think he really believes he can really have a tremendous impact on this club.
But, you know, given the way the market's gone, you know, the free agent market this winter, Alex, and given the fact that, you know, that there was, I guess, some pressure, I don't know how much public pressure you guys feel, but the deal was out, there was the talk was that it was already done. You know, it feels like he could have held you up for a bit more money if he'd wanted to play against the market. It sounds like he didn't really do that.
Yeah, and I think we, you know, and it's with all due, obviously we wanted him, and with all due respect to him, you know, we had our number, and we weren't going to deviate from that number. And, if, you know, Sandy Alderson with the Mets knew that if the dollars weren't in a certain range, you know, there wasn't going to be a deal there and there would be a trade. And, you know, part of the appeal, you know, part of the value of the player is, one, he's got tremendous ability and he's a front-of-the-rotation starter. But a huge part of the appeal is obviously the length of the contract, the dollars committed to the contract. That's all part of the value that we have to take into consideration because of the other commitments that we made. So it's hard to quantify that in players, but that was a big part of it. I mean, there's a lot of great frontline starters, but, you know, they're making $20, $25 million a year. We just can't, you know, touch those guys right now. You know, one, trade for them. They have, a lot of them have full no-trade clauses. Two, recruit them as free agents. You know, that it's very hard to guarantee you're going to have someone come to your ballpark. I mean, you look at the Rangers and a guy like Greinke, who they wanted, they can only go to one team. So factoring all that in, you know, a big part of this was, you know, we have to be right on the evaluation of the player. And we see him as a frontline starter. And if you look at the last 10 years or so of all the number one starters that have been traded or acquired, Sabathia, Halliday, Johan Santana, Zach Greinke, Cliff Lee, all of them either, you know, two of them in Santana and Halliday had full no trade clauses and dictated where they went and signed extensions for $20 million or more. The other three were rentals for other teams, got the free agency, signed $100 million plus contracts, chose clubs and had full no trade clauses. So the window and the opportunity to get these players is so rare and so hard. And when you factor in where our club is and the timing of our club and who we have under contract and the commitments, it was something we felt we needed to, a deal we had to make.
With Alex Anthopoulos, I don't want to slot anybody deliberately, but a case can be made, I think you would concur, that your number one starter for the last 2 years is maybe your number five starter going into the start of the season. That's Ricky Romero. And it isn't really because of an off season, although that, I guess, takes care of only a small part of it. Can you recall anybody overhauling an entire staff as much as this staff's been overhauled?
I've never thought about it, but, I mean, the numbers speak for itself. It had to be done. You know, I guess I would say, you know what, with I'm sure there's been a lot of other teams that have not done well in that department and, you know, had terrible ERAs like we did and lack of quality starts, and I'm sure a lot of other clubs have overhauled. I think, you know, the part that we're excited about is, you know, we feel good about the quality that we brought in. But if we were going to go forward, you know, that was an area that it had to be addressed, and I know I talked about it at the end of the season. If we don't pitch, we're not going to go anywhere. And, you know, we felt good about the offense, and you can always get better in the bullpen. But the rotation, you know, it starts with the rotation, as we all know. And that needed to be addressed one way or the other. And we paid the price in terms of prospects and so on, but it was a matter of, you know, who are our core players, how old are they, how long are they signed for, and we can't be in the middle. We have to go one way or the other. And ultimately, we felt we're much closer to contention than we were going the other way and trying to build or rebuild and so on.
Alex, how does it feel? You know, obviously, the logic of the deal is all there, and the timing and all of the stuff you've talked about. But how does it feel as a guy from the development, the acquisition and development end of the organization, to watch guys who you know either you drafted or you traded for, in the case of D'Arnaud, who you probably imagined as Major League Baseball players for a long time, tried to project them, had a date when they probably would show up, and then to see those guys go away. What's it like?
It's always hard, and you know, you get attached to the players, and everyone gets attached to their own prospects, and they're very talented. But you know, again, we've always talked about we have these prospects, one, to help our own team, but also to use in trade for times like this. And I think sometimes, and I'm certainly guilty of this as well, we forget that all the time we spend at winter meetings, GM meetings, scouting games, traveling, everything that we do, getting excited about prospects and debuts, it's all supposed to be about winning. I think sometimes we lose sight of that fact, that that's the end goal and that's the end game. And, you know, I'd love to keep all of our prospects and hope they can all time, that they all get there at the same time and none of them have to be sent down and they all can have career years at the same time and we can all extend them at the same time. But yeah. You know, sometimes things happen you don't expect. You never expected Jose Bautista to be who he was. You know, we thought Encarnacion could be good. I don't know that I would have told you 40 home runs was going to be there. The list goes on and on with some of the other players we have on the roster. So I think you have to almost sit back and wait for the opportunity to pounce. I think the team will tell you when you need to make these moves and when you need to make these decisions. And they're certainly painful, but if it's about winning and winning for not just 1 year but for an extended period, you know, these are decisions you have to make.
Last question. Have you taken any phone calls today from any of your players? Any of the guys on the roster already calling, or maybe either today or over the weekend, and say, wow, this is great?
Normally when they get announced, you get texts. But I've started to get some texts today that, you know, some guys are excited and so on. I think once things get announced, you get a little bit more of it. But obviously just when everything broke, you get bombarded with emails and texts anyways from sure. Media and so on. But there's no question players are going to be excited. Anytime you make the big league team better, they're going to be excited. Players will be the last ones that will worry about guys that are coming down the road because, you know, they're worried about winning now in their careers, and they should be. So you always know anytime you make the Big League Cup better, players will always get excited. And it's an exciting time for the club.
Congratulations. Another rabbit out of the hat. Take the next 24 hours off and and then back to the grindstone.
Thanks
as always. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Alex Anthopoulos, the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays.
These are remarkable times.
Wow. The last few weeks have just been extraordinary, haven't they? What's Zani doing? Is he going to join us next? All right. Another catcher. Talk about all the catchers.
You'll know when he gets here.
Oh, yeah. Greg's on when Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet.
Odds are most people won't be a rock star, fly in a private jet, or date a supermodel. You are not most people. You play at Bodog.net. You know the odds. You know how the pros think. You know how to win. Because until the night is over, the final buzzer sounds, and the last card is played, anything can happen. That's why you play the game. Bodog.net.
Two minutes before the hour, I'm coming up front here. Greg Zahn has wandered in. So if you went to Vegas right now and took a look on the big board, who do you think the favorite is to win the World Series?
It's hard to say. I'm going to say the San Francisco Giants.
No. They're 14-1. The Cal Angels of Los Angeles from Anaheim are 8.5-1.
I forgot about
the
that.
The Dodgers are 8.5-1. The Washington Nationals are 9-1. And the Toronto Blue Jays are 8-1. They're the favorite.
What?
What? I kid you not. Do I lie? There no. It is. 8-1, top of the list.
Yeah. Read wow, it. That's incredible.
Should have bet them when they were, what, 100-1 or whatever it was in September?
That's too
late.
Tremendous.
Too late to get down now. Wow. So, this is, you know, he just keeps adding pieces to this little puzzle. Looks pretty good right now, don't it?
Sure does. I think it's fantastic. I love it. The deal in principle to me is fantastic. I'll trade prospects for proven major league players any day of the week. And you get a Cy Young Award winner. The only thing that makes me weary about it, or leery, not weary. I am weary of talking about it, but I'm leery, is the fact that he's a knuckleballer. And I've said it probably 15 times in the last 2 days. She is a fickle lady, the knuckleball.
Yeah. But he's been a crazy consistent knuckleballer for the last 3 years.
Yes. Yes.
You know, since he figured it out.
Is there any, what's the difference? This is a guy that doesn't throw the Hoyt Wilhelm kind of knuckleball. He throws a harder knuckleball.
Throws both, I think.
Yeah, but most of the time, a harder knuckleball.
I think that.
What do you know about it?
Well, I've faced it. It's more of a 1-2 move knuckleball versus a 3-4 move. It's not quite.
Explain that one, Lucy.
Well, you're going to see the ball come out of his hand in the upper 70s, low 80s. It'll make one move and then a final move. So it may go right and then go down and to the left. Whereas Wakefield, a Hoyt Wilhelm, even a Steve Sparks when he was in the league, they bounce all over the place. And it could make three moves, almost in a circular gyro type of motion. It could go right, down, left, and down again. And you usually know that if you can see it high, you let it fly against those softer knuckleball flyers, because when it makes its final move, it's going to go down. Well, the film I've seen on R.A. Dickey, sometimes his knuckleball won't go down. Sometimes it'll just zoom left and right.
Yeah.
And it'll actually plane out through the zone. And he gets a lot of strikeouts in the upper part of the strike zone because guys subscribe to that old theory, tee it high or see it high, let it fly. And it makes a late move by him in the upper part of the zone. And it's harder.
Is it harder to catch?
I'm not sure if it's harder to catch, but it catching a knuckleball is very difficult. I've heard it likened to trying to catch a butterfly with a pair of chopsticks.
Oh, you never caught one?
Well, I have.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So the first one I ever saw was from Hoyt Wilhelm.
Big-ass glove? Did you have the big?
No, I was actually subscribed to the other theory. I liked a small glove.
Did you?
Yeah. But I had a very limited experience with it.
Suzanne, if you were talking to JPR and Sebia today, and he said, okay, what do I have to know about catching a knuckleballer? What would you tell him?
The thing you have to know is you have to keep your hands close to your body, and you have to wait till the last minute and snatch it. You can't go out and get it. You can't try to frame it. You just have to try to keep it in front of you. You got to try to keep the ball close to you, and you really can't get fancy with it. But you keep your hands close to your body. You can almost, and you know his style of catching. If you see JP, he's not one of those guys that really leaves the glove out there a whole lot. Real quiet, doesn't give a real full big target for a long time. His hands are kind of close to his body as it is, but you could almost lay the glove on your chest. And at the last minute, snatch it. You kind of turn your body a little bit sideways, and you just wait till the very, very last minute and snap it.
Are some guys better at it, or is it just practice?
No, some guys are definitely better at it. They just have better hands. JP's improving all the time, but it's a good thing they traded for Toley. There's a reason why he is coming in this deal, because he does such a great job with R.A. Dickey. Now, that being said, this guy Nickias that they got from the Mets as well, they might want to give him some extensive time with this knuckleball, because if something happens to Toley, you do not want J.P. Arencibia catching the knuckleballer. He needs to be able to go out there for 4 days, play, and have a free mind. I think this is going to be a breakout offensive year for J.P., and having to deal with the knuckleball would just set him back. I think you leave him alone and make sure that Nickias, if something goes wrong with Toley, he's the guy that comes up and catches it.
One of the things we don't, well, I guess we do talk about it a little bit, is what impact does the knuckleballer have on the pitcher the next day? On the team faces a knuckleballer like Dickey, and then has to go out there, and let's say it's Morrow the next day, firing at 97 or 98.
Well, there's a lot of guys who will take the day off against Dickey and actually rather face Morrow. Because I know from my perspective, I was a switch hitter. I tried to face Wakefield left-handed. And early on, I had no success. Then I tried to go up there against him right-handed because he was messing up my left-handed swing so much. I figured, you know what? I can't hit him anyways, but for some reason, they keep running me out there against this guy. I'm going to go up there right-handed because my right-handed stroke was pretty well messed up my entire
career. And Wakefield was a right-hander.
He was. And I remember he and I are kind of friendly. We're somewhat buddies. And I went up there right-handed against him, and he kind of tipped his cap at me. He's like, really, you're going to try this right-handed now? So he flipped a breaking ball at me, and I hadn't seen a right-on-right breaking ball since Little League. And I tell you what, I folded up like soft poo in the rain. It was unbelievable. I cowered in the fetal position in that right-handed batter's box in Fenway, and he was standing on the mound laughing at me. And I was like, oh, Lord. But you know what?
Did you get to him at all?
No. But I did get to Dickey later because of Matt Stairs, who I think is the greatest knuckleball hitter of all times. And he taught me his technique of hitting the knuckleball, which is completely opposite of what you try to teach yourself. Everybody says, get up in the front of the box, get up there in the front of the box and let the ball get to you. Matt Stairs would stand with his feet together in the back of the batter's box, a la Babe Ruth, and try to catch that thing and hook it out front. He's like, don't try to go the other way with it. Try to pull it. And I was like, you're crazy. And so I went up there and I tried it against Dickey, and I ended up hitting a double in the gap. And then some knuckleballer from the Dodgers my last year was flinging him up there, and I got two hits off of him, too. I was like, genius, genius.
Music's playing. We got to get out of here. Nice to see you. If we don't talk to you.
Yep.
Although Anthopoulos still got a few more days before Christmas. He could make 10 more deals.
He might. I'm leaving Friday for vacation. Happy Christmas, Kwanzaa, everybody.
Happy Festivus.
Yes.
From the rest of us.
Yes, there you go.
This Greg's on. Our thanks to him and to who else was on? Oh, Anthopoulos was on.
Jeff Blair.
Jeff Blair was on. We'll see you tomorrow.